Big Dolly droned on steadily southeastwards, and there was very little to relieve the boredom of the flight. The dawn was just breaking when they crossed the African coast at a remote and lonely desert beach that Yanni had chosen for just this reason. Once they were over the land, there was as little of interest to see as there had been over the sea. The desert stretched away, bleak and brown and featureless in every direction. At irregular intervals, they heard Yanni in the cockpit speaking to air traffic control, but as they were able to hear only half the conversation, they had no idea as to the identity or the nationality of the station. Occasionally, Yanni dropped the heavily accented English he was affecting and broke into Arabic. Rayan was surprised by Yanni's fluency in the language, but then as an Afrikaner, the guttural sounds came naturally to him. He was even able to mimic the different accents and dialects of Libyan and Egyptian convincingly as he lied his way across the desert. For the first few hours, Sapper pored over his dam drawings, then, unable to proceed further until he had the exact measurements of the site, he curled up on his bunk with a paperback novel. The unfortunate author was unable to hold his attention for long. The open book sagged down over his face, and the pages fluttered every time he emitted a long, grinding snore. Nicholas and Royan huddled on her bunk with the chessboard between them until hunger overtook them and they moved to the makeshift galley. Here Royan took the subservient role of bread slicer and coffee maker, while Nicholas demonstrated his artistry in creating a range of Dagwood sandwiches. They shared the food with Yanni and Fred, perched up behind the pilot's seats in the cockpit. "Are we still over Egyptian territory?" Royan asked. With his mouth full, Yanni pointed out over the port wingtip of Big Dolly. 50 nautical miles out there is Wadi Halfa. My father was killed there in 1943. He was with the 6th South African Division. They called it Wadi Hellfire." He took another monstrous bite of the sandwich. "I never knew the old man. Fred and I landed there once. Tried to find his grave." He shrugged eloquently. "It's a hell of a big piece of country. Lots of graves. Very few of them marked." Nobody spoke for a while. They chewed their sandwiches, thinking their own thoughts. Nicholas's father had also fought in the desert against Rommel. He had been more fortunate than Yanni's father. Nicholas glanced across at Royan. She was staring out of the window at her homeland, and there was something so passionate and fraught in her gaze that Nicholas was startled. The temptation to think of her as an English girl, like her mother, was at most times irresistible. It was only in odd moments such as these that he became intensely aware of the other facets of her being. She seemed unaware of his scrutiny. Her preoccupation was total. He wondered what she was thinking. What dark and mysterious thoughts were smouldering there? He remembered how she had seized the very first opportunity on their return from Ethiopia to hurry back to Cairo, and once again a feeling of disquiet came over him. He wondered if other emotional ties, of which he was unaware, might not transcend those loyalties which he had taken for granted. He realized with something of a shock that they had been together for only a few short weeks, and despite the strong attraction that she exerted over him, he knew very little about her. At that moment she started and looked round at him quickly. Crowded as they were at the portside window, they stared into each other's eyes from a distance of only a foot or so. It was only for a few seconds, but what he saw in her eyes, the dark shadows of guilt or some other emotion, did nothing to allay his misgivings. She turned back to Yanni, leaning over his shoulder to ask, "When will we cross the Nile?" "On the other side of the border. The Sudanese government concentrate all their attentions on the rebels in the far south. There are some stretches of the river here in the north that are completely deserted. Pretty soon now we'll be going down right on the deck to get under the radar pings from the Sudanese stations around Khartoum. We will slip through one of the gaps." Yanni lifted the aeronautical map on his clipboard from his lap and held it so that she could see it. With one thick, stubby finger, he showed Royan their intended route. It was drawn in with blue wax pencil. "Big Dolly has taken this route so often that she could fly it without my hands on the stick. Couldn't you, old girl?" He patted the instrument panel affectionately. 2 hours later, When Nicholas and Royan were back at the chessboard in the main cabin, Yanni called them on the PA. OK, folks, no need to panic. We're going to lose some altitude now. Come up front and watch the show. Strapped into fold-down seats in the back of the flight deck, they were treated to a superb exhibition of low-flying by Fred. The descent was so rapid that Royan felt that they were about to fall out of the sky, and that she had left her stomach back there somewhere at 30,000 feet. Fred levelled Big Dolly out only feet above the desert floor, so low that it was like riding in a high-speed bus rather than flying. Fred lifted her delicately over each undulation of the tawny, sun-scorched terrain, skimming the black rock ridges and standing on a wingtip to swerve around the occasional wind-blasted hill. "Nile crossing in 7.5 minutes," Yanni punched the stopwatch fixed to the control wheel in front of him. "And unless my navigation has gone all to hell, there should be an island shaped like a shark directly under us as we cross." As the needle of the stopwatch came up to the mark, the broad, glittering expanse of the river flashed beneath them. Royan caught a brief glimpse of a green island with a few thatched huts on the tip, and a dozen dugout canoes lying on the narrow beach. "Well, the old man hasn't lost his touch yet," Fred remarked. "Still good for a few thousand miles before we trade him in." "Not so much of the old man's stuff, you little squirt. I have some tricks up my sleeve that I haven't even used yet." "Yeah, ask Mara," Fred grinned affectionately at his father, as he banked onto a new southwesterly heading, and with his wingtip so close to the ground that he scattered a herd of camels feeding in the sparse thorn scrub. They lumbered away across the plain, each trailing a wisp of white dust like a wedding train. "Another 3 hours flying time to the rendezvous," Yanni looked up from the map. "Spot on. We should land 40 minutes before sunset. Couldn't be better." "I'd better go and change into my hiking gear then," Rayan went back into the main cabin, pulled her bag from under the bunk, and disappeared into the lavatory. When she emerged 20 minutes later, she wore khaki culottes and a cotton top. "These boots were made for walking," she stamped them on the deck. "That's fine," Nicholas watched her from the bunk. "But how about that knee?" "It'll get me there," she said defensively. "You mean I'm going to be deprived of the pleasure of backpacking you again?" The Ethiopian mountains came up so subtly on the eastern horizon that Royan was not aware of them until Nicholas pointed out to her the faint blue outline against the brighter blue of the African sky. "Almost there," he glanced at his wristwatch. "Let's go up to the flight deck." Looking forward through the windshield, there was no landmark ahead of them, just the vast brown savanna, speckled with the black dots of acacia trees. 10 minutes to go," Yanni intoned. "Anyone see anything?" There was no reply, and they all stared ahead. 5 minutes. "Over there," Nicholas pointed over his shoulder. "That's the course of the Blue Nile." A denser grove of thorn trees formed a dark line far ahead. "And there is the smokestack of the derelict sugar mill on the riverbank. McNamara says that the airstrip is about 3 miles from the mill." "Well, if it is, it's not shown on the chart," Yanni grumbled. 1 minute before we're on the coordinates." The minute ticked off slowly on the stopwatch. "Still nothing." Fred broke off as a red flare shot up from the earth directly ahead and flashed past Big Dolly's nose. Everyone in the cockpit smiled and relaxed with relief. "Right on the nose," Nicholas patted Yanni's shoulder in congratulations. "Couldn't have done better myself." Fred climbed a few hundred feet and came round in a 180 turn. Now there were two signal fires burning out there on the plain, one with black smoke, the other sending a column of white straight up into the still evening sky. It was only when they were a kilometre out that they were able to make out the faint outline of the overgrown and long disused landing strip. Rosiris airstrip had been built 20 years before by a company that tried to grow sugar cane under irrigation from the Blue Nile. But Africa had won again, and the company had passed into oblivion, leaving this feeble scrape mark on the plain as its epitaph. McNamara had chosen this remote and deserted place for the rendezvous. "No sign of a reception committee," Yanni grunted. "What do you want me to do?" "Continue our approach," Nicholas told him. There should be another flare. Ah, there it is. The ball of fire shot up from the clump of thorn trees at the far end of the runway, and for the first time they were able to make out human figures in the bleak landscape. They had stayed hidden until the very last moment. That's Mech, all right. Go ahead and land. As Big Dolly finished her rollout, and the end of the rough and pitted runway came up ahead, a figure in camouflage fatigues popped up ahead of them. With a pair of paddles, it signalled them to taxi into the space between two of the tallest thorn trees. Yanni cut the engines and grinned at them over his shoulder. Well, boys and girls, looks like we pulled off another lucky one. Even from the height of Big Dolly's cockpit, there was no mistaking the commanding figure of Mech Nimmer as he emerged from the cover of the clump of acacia trees. Only now did they realise that the trees had been shrouded with camouflage netting. This was why they had not been able to spot any sign of human presence from the air. As soon as the loading ramp was lowered, Mech Nimmer came striding up at it. Nicholas, they embraced, and after Mech had kissed him noisily on each cheek, he held Nicholas at arm's length and studied his face, delighted to see him again. So I was right. You are up to your old tricks. Not simply a dick-dick shoot, was it? How can I lie to an old friend? Nicholas shrugged. It always came easy to you, Mech laughed. But I am glad we are going to have some fun together. Life has been very boring recently. I bet, Nicholas punched his shoulder affectionately. A slim, graceful figure followed Mech up the ramp. In the olive-green fatigues, Nicholas hardly recognised Tessé until she spoke. She wore canvas para-boots and a cloth cap that made her look like a boy. "Nicholas, Royan, welcome back!" Tessé cried. The two women embraced as enthusiastically as the men had done. "Come on, you Osman!" Yanni protested. "This isn't Woodstock. I have to get back to Malta tonight. I want to take off before dark." Swiftly, Mech took charge of the offloading. His men swarmed aboard and manhandled the pallets forward on the rollers, while Sapper started up his beloved front-end loader and used it to run the cargo down the ramp and stack it in the acacia grove under the camouflage netting. With so many hands to help, it went swiftly, and Big Dolly's hold was emptied just as the sun settled wearily onto the horizon and the short African twilight bled all colour from the landscape. Yanni and Nicholas had one last hurried discussion in the cockpit while Fred completed his flight checks. They went over the plans and radio procedures one last time. 4 days from today, Yanni agreed, and they shook hands briefly. Let the man go, Nicholas, Mech bellowed from below. We must get across the border before dawn. They watched Big Dolly taxi down to the end of the strip and swing round. The engine beat crescendoed as she came tearing back in a long, rolling shroud of dust and lifted off over their heads. Yanni waggled his wings in farewell, and without navigation lights showing, the great aircraft blended like a black bat into the darkening sky and disappeared almost immediately. "Come here," Nicholas led Royan to a seat under the acacia. "I don't want that knee to play up again." He pushed her culottes halfway up to her thigh and strapped the knee with an elastic bandage, trying not to make his pleasure in this task too apparent. He was pleased to see that the bruising had almost faded and there was no longer any swelling. He palpated it gently. Her skin was velvety and the flesh beneath it firm and warm to the touch. He looked up and from the expression on her face realised that she was enjoying this intimacy as much as he was. As he caught her eye, she flushed slightly and quickly smoothed down her culottes. She jumped up and said, "Tessé and I have a lot of catching up to do," and hurried across to join her. "I'm leaving a full combat platoon to guard your stores here," Mech explained to Nicholas, as Tessé led Royan away. "We will travel in a very small party as far as the border. I don't expect any trouble. There is very little enemy activity in this sector at the moment. Lots of fighting in the south. But we are quiet here. That is why I chose this rendezvous." "How far to the Ethiopian border?" Nicholas wanted to know. 5 hours' march," Mech told him. "We will slip through one of our pipelines after the moon has set. The rest of my men are waiting in the entrance to the Abbey Gorge.